From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
You wrote Trump is toast. Do you stand behind that today?
Oh, even more so.
I would say take Harris over 270 electoral votes. I think she's going to win.
We're tied on election day. As always, it will. The polls will be tied, and then he'll lose.
This is the biggest red wave I've seen since Ronald Reagan's 49 state victory in 1984.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
Republicans steamrolled. They have captured the Senate. The House still up for grabs, but those close to Speaker Johnson think the Republicans are on track to have that as well.
We have to acknowledge that Donald Trump knows our country better than we do.
This will forever be remembered as the day the American people regained control of their country.
And I think that we just witnessed the greatest political comeback in the history of the United States of America.
And the Politico says it best, perhaps, Trump is back. And the reluctance to give Trump the win was made me laugh out loud this morning. Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade. Historic day. Donald Trump has done what only Grover Cleveland has done in American history. He has lost. He's won, lost, and then won it all back again. But in such a convincing fashion. And we'll get into details on it. But how about this? 2:30 in the morning, Fox slow to confirm any states. Just says, okay, this is overwhelming. I mean, he's won everything. He's president. 2:30 in the morning. I got in to work today at 3:45. They still haven't declared. I'm about to go on the set at 5 a.m. and CNN says we have a major announcement. New Jersey now goes to Harris. What is? I mean, Mark Thiessen is here now. And I'm not kidding. New Jersey. And by the way, the fact that it took him all those hours, he was tight in New Hampshire, tight in Virginia, and tight in New Jersey, and he cut the lead even in New York, Mark Thiessen.
Yep.
What surprises you most about this?
Well, what surprised me most is that you're here. I got off the air at 3 a.m. and you were.
I walked in the building.
And you walked in the building half an hour
but
later.
You were on all night, right?
I was on all night, and then I slept 3 hours and came in here to do this. The whole thing was surprising. It's just remarkable. I said on the air last night that Donald Trump is the greatest political comeback in 132 years. I mean, the only other president, as you pointed out, who to lose the White House and then win it back 4 years later is Grover Cleveland, who lost the White House to Benjamin Harrison in 1888 and then came back and beat him 4 years later in 1892. So what that means is Donald Trump isn't just a once-in-a-generation political talent. He's a once-in-a-century political talent. To do that in the modern era is simply unthinkable. It's just such a huge, huge political comeback story. I'm stunned by it. It's great.
I mean, there's so many elements. I couldn't wait to get to it because we had so many reporters on Fox and Friends this morning, which is great. But you just want to talk. There's something to go through. So a couple of things stood out to me. Number one is she did not concede.
So
there's no excuse not to concede.
So Trump called me yesterday at 3:30 in the morning. After he gave his acceptance speech, and I asked him, has she, because I watched the speech, I was on the air as he was speaking, and then we commented on it afterwards. And, you know, I'm a presidential speechwriter. I know how these speeches go. The first thing you almost always hear the candidate say is, I just received a call from my opponent, Kamala Harris. She called to congratulate me, and I congratulate her on a hard fought campaign. I appreciate that. And we're going to bring our nation together. And Trump didn't say that. And if she had called, I thought he would have said that. He's a gracious man, and he's the kind of guy who wants to unite the country in victory. He's not sort of a vengeful person. He's a person who would take that moment to embrace the other side and unite the country. When he called, I said, "Has she called you?" And he said, "No, she hasn't."
Did Joe Biden call?
I don't believe so either, though. I mean, Biden. I'm sure Biden was asleep at 3:30. I think Biden was probably asleep at 9 after with a warm glass of milk. No, as far as I know, certainly by at 3:30 a.m., no one had called him, which is just, you know, stunning because this was an absolute
rout.
It was a landslide. It's a electoral college landslide. It's a congressional landslide. It's a popular vote landslide. There's no doubt whatsoever. And, you know, I can understand, you know, when they announced, when Cedric Richmond came out and said, you know, she's not going to come out to speak tonight.
In fact,
we're
going to
talk
that
tomorrow.
Well, when we hear this, so we're waiting to hear something. You're waiting. You're on the air. And this is what you get. By the way, he was the former advisor to Biden. Biden's fine. Biden's fine. 2 days later, I want you to meet my new candidate, Vice President Kamala Harris. Cut 11.
I want to say good evening to all of the Harris campaign, the campaign family. Thank you for all that you have done. Thank you for being here. Thank you for believing in the promise of America. We still have votes to count. We still have states that have not been called yet. We will continue overnight to fight to make sure that every vote is counted, that every voice has spoken. So you won't hear from the vice president tonight, but you will hear from her tomorrow.
Okay. No, come on, go ahead.
No, I mean, so when he said those words, none of the blue wall states had come in. But then Wisconsin came in. And once Wisconsin came in, that closed the path to 270 for her. Trump had won. There was no combination of states.
We should tell people because North Carolina went. Arizona virtually locked up in the Southwest, even though it hasn't been formally called.
Yeah.
Then you have Pennsylvania. When did Pennsylvania come in?
I think it came in
before Wisconsin.
It might have come out. It definitely came in before Wisconsin. Wisconsin was the last one that locked it in, because even with Pennsylvania, if she had won the blue wall states, then she still had a very narrow path to victory. But as soon as Wisconsin came in, it was over. So they knew that night that she had lost and that there was no path to victory. How do you have a decisive defeat like that that's been confirmed, where there's zero path and the candidate doesn't come out and concede the election and call her opponent?
See,
what was she? Did she go to bed?
And Mark, you're 100% right about that. But they'll point to the fact that Donald Trump never conceded 2020.
That's fair.
And, you know, and Joe Biden, is he going to do something traditional and say, congratulations, Mr. President-elect, why don't you come set up a date to tour the White House?
Okay, but here's the thing about that. The Democrats portray themselves as the last bastion upholding the standards of our democracy, right? So if you're criticizing Donald Trump for not having conceded the last election, which I think is a fair criticism, you should model behavior that you think is appropriate, right? And so you do concede the election, and you do preside over a transition. And the other thing that's really important is they've got some things to make up for, because when Donald Trump won in 2016, they accused him of being a Russian agent. They said that they all said, "Not my president." Remember the cries of "Not my president"? You know, I have a column in the Washington Post today. I wrote a column in advance anticipating the Trump victory so I could publish it. The second it was done, they hit send on the Post webpage, and we had the first column up. But I pointed out that this cry of "Not my president" was disgusting. You know, to say
how many boycotted the inauguration? A lot.
No, I mean, they set limousines on fire during the inauguration.
There were riots happening
and the women's march and all this stuff. You know, when Joe Biden was elected, I didn't vote for Joe Biden. I was pretty sure I was going to oppose a lot of what he was going to do, though he said he planned to unite the country and bring people together. And I was open to that. But I wrote a column in The Washington Post saying Joe Biden is my president, whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
And so today my column in the Washington Post is Donald Trump is my president. He's your president, too. And, you know, we should all be rooting for him to succeed, whether you voted for him or not. We should all, as a country, we have a democratic process. He won fair and square. All the things that were said about him, the American people weighed that, and they decided to put him back in the Oval Office. And so now he should get a chance to succeed, and we should all come together and give him that chance.
So just as you understand, most of the people agree with you. Look at the way – I mean, he won the popular vote by over 5 million.
Yep.
He wins Florida by double digits. Hurricane ravaged North Carolina, still came out with him by a bigger margin. Virginia almost went to him. New Hampshire kept people biting their nails for a while. And also Iowa – that Des Moines Register poll that had everybody thinking perhaps the pollsters were wrong and this is going to be a route for Harris ends up being a convincing win in Iowa again.
Yep.
Minnesota single digits. And then, of course, the whole blue wall is falling into line. And then even look in New York. In New Jersey, he did much better.
He did better than any president in New York City since 1988.
Most people are happy with the – listen, most people are happy, Mark, with the outcome – of the election.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, the American people have spoken, and we, you know, all these people who said democracy is on the ballot. You know, I had Britt Hume on my podcast, which you haven't come on yet. Britt, and one of the things that Britt said was democracy isn't on the ballot. Democracy is the ballot. And I think that's exactly right. The democracy is the ballot. The American people cast their ballots. They chose Donald Trump. That is democracy.
Let's tell everybody, I just was texting with Speaker Johnson. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Kevin McCarthy 1 hour ago. He believes thoroughly that the House is going to stay in Republican hands. Even though two New York seats have flipped, mm-hmm. he said North Carolina, they got three more from redistricting. He was explaining it to me. But they think it's going to go. They just think they're going to have a slightly wider margin than they had. It's hard to get smaller. However, on the Senate side is really a story. Yeah. Bernie Moreno, never leading, wins by 10 o'clock at night.
Yep.
Then you have Rogers was up most of the time. Now he might be down a half a point. I'm not sure where that's going to go. But in McCormick is up in Pennsylvania. Sheehy is one in Montana, flipped. And then, of course, you got what happened in West Virginia. Governor Jim Justice, he's going to walk right in. They're probably going to have 53, at least 50. Oh, by the way, Hubdy's in contention.
Yep.
Could still pull it off.
Though the Libertarian is siphoning votes away from him. I'm sure the Democrats poured a lot of money into the Libertarian there.
Tammy Baldwin over Tammy Baldwin.
But here's the thing. Number one, if we swept all those remaining seats, we'd get 55-seat majority. I mean, you know, even if we get 53 or something like that, we have no pickup opportunities in the next two cycles in the Senate. So this is it. This is the majority we're going to have, and we got to protect it. It's going to be very hard to pick up more seats. So it's really important that we've swept all those races. But all credit goes to Steve Daines and Donald Trump, who teamed up this time. They looked at the disaster of the 2022 midterms, which was an unmitigated disaster because Joe Biden was the worst, most unpopular president in the history of our country and turned in the best midterm performance since JFK. And that was because Americans looked at the candidates we had selected and said, I don't like this alternative.
And abortion.
I think that's a big excuse. We can have a long debate about that. No, not really, because you know what? The number of people who vote on abortion may be a little bit higher in the wake of Dobbs, but if we had had good candidates, it wouldn't have been decisive. It would have been it was only a factor in the sense that you had really weak candidates who were underperforming.
But I want to build on that.
Yeah, but what Daines did is he sat down with Trump and they came up with a strategy of making sure that we got the best, most electable candidates in each of these Senate races. And they went through them and they entered into the primaries. They got involved. They put their finger on the scale in terms of picking good electable candidates. And so, with the exception of Kerry Lake, we had a slew of really good electable candidates in these Senate races. And so it's not enough to have because we had the advantage going in on the field. You know, the field was tilted towards us in 92 and it still didn't work because we picked bad candidates. This time Trump got involved together with Daines and picked really, really good candidates.
But here's how the gratification became delayed. Because of that, Joe Biden said, wait, maybe I am more popular. I won that vote. Maybe my agenda is popular. Look at how well I did in the midterms. I defied all expectations. And guess who stuck around for reelection? Now, if he got trounced like Obama, lose 60 seats, and he says, remember it was a shellacking.
He would have been out.
So he wouldn't have
had
run
a competitive primary.
And Democrats probably would have benefited.
That's true. I mean, it's sort of, you know, when you fumble a ball and it ends up helping you, the play ends up helping you win in the long run, then, you know, maybe, yes. So in unintentionally, our incompetence in 2022 helped us win in 2024.
I subtly believe you accepted my idea, but I'm not really sure. I'm going to play the show back later. Back in a moment.
Covering this historic election like no other.
This will forever be remembered as the day the American people regained control of their country.
We did it, Joe.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The headwinds she faced are real. right? When I think about the right track, wrong track numbers, she couldn't overcome that. When I think about the economic anxiety that people around the country feel, she couldn't overcome that. But I also have a question about the role that race and gender played in these results. Here are the facts. If we would pull back the layers, she is a person of color. She is a she. And she is in an interracial marriage. And I wonder, I have this question mark in my mind over whether all of those things combined was too much for pockets of this country. And it is a stunning, this says more about who we are as a country and this moment that this overqualified African-American mixed race woman did not win this race. And she lost it to a man who was a felon.
Mark, this is so out of control. This is a guy I never heard of, Anthony Coley, former senior advisor to the attorney general.
I mean, that's just delusional. 65 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump did it because they opposed mixed marriages. I mean, you know, get your head out of, you know.
And the American people are not capable of voting for a woman.
So here's the thing, okay? The Democrats knew that Donald Trump won the 2016 election on the issue of illegal immigration. And knowing that, when they came into power, when they defeated him in 2020 and took over the White House, what is the first thing they did? Unleash the worst border crisis in American history. And what did you think? The voters were going to reward you for that? No.
They literally did the thing
it's like the insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and thinking it's you're going to have a different result. They literally took the issue that won Donald Trump the White House the first time and did it on gave it to him on steroids for a second election. Why did people vote against him? Because he unleashed the worst inflation in 4 decades. The Americans are paying. I'll give you an economic statistic that explains why people were unhappy. On Joe and Biden and Kamala Harris's watch, Americans went over 4 years from the highest level of personal savings in the history of our country, thanks to the lockdowns and the COVID aid, to the highest level of personal debt and credit card debt in the history of our country. So you've gone – if you're a working class American, you've gone from having a bank account full of money – to spending all that down because of the inflation,
right?
To then racking up credit card debt. There's a statistic. Americans are paying $125 for a $100 basket of grocery, and 60% of Americans are using credit card debt and payday loans to pay for groceries.
Crazy.
That's why Donald Trump
20
won.
Seconds left. You talked to him briefly last night?
I did.
What do you think? How happy was he?
He was thrilled. He was in a jovial mood.
What time was that?
3:30 in the morning. Yeah.
And he was just did he sound tired?
No, not at all. I sounded tired. I was back in my hotel room after getting off the air at 3 and getting ready for bed.
When do you expect her to concede?
Hopefully today. She should 12? Do it.
12?
Something like that, probably.
And
if she doesn't by now, I mean, it should have happened already. I would hope the phone call happened.
Would you expect Biden to address this?
I think they all have to.
We've never been here before. It's been a long time.
It is, absolutely.
Right? Mark, thanks so much. 2 hours sleep. Great of you to do this.
My pleasure.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
So you asked, are there any places that the vice president is overperforming Joe Biden in 2020? So we can show you that as well. We just bring that out here. Harris overperforming 2020.
Holy smokes.
There you go. So let this go away and see if there's anything on the east side there.
Literally nothing?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
By 3% or more.
What do you say? What do you say if you spend all your time talking about how incredibly incompetent and crazy Donald Trump is, how he's unworthy of the office, should be disqualified, go out of your way to report on his court cases, cover it like it's 24-hour court TV, talk about what his speech is, let him talk for an hour and a half, pick out two sentences you find unacceptable and blow him out of proportion? What if you do that and the guy runs away with a landslide election? Do you look at yourself and say, has anyone been listening? And the answer is no. And if they are listening, they're not taking your lead. Rich Lowry is editor of National Review and joins me now. Rich, there's so much to take away from this landslide victory where the president, I think, is in the process of taking every battleground state. And now I think we're at 52 Republican senators. And there's optimism from the current speaker and the former speaker that Republicans are going to keep the House. What stands out from you as the biggest surprise?
The scale of it, and I guess it's not shocking that he's probably going to win every swing state. That seemed possible, but that he's also going to win the popular vote, maybe that seemed possible if you believe the polls, because the polls had it very narrow. But it's still just extraordinary, and it's just an amazing political and personal achievement against an incredibly strong headwind, some of it of his own doing after the 2020 election and some of his candidate choices in 2022, but obviously a full-on effort to stop them from every center of power in the country, practically, including most shamefully the lawfare and the Bragg case. And he never blinked. He never slowed down. He never showed the slightest doubt ever. I remember something I wrote he liked very early on, maybe sometime around the primaries or right after the primaries, and he wrote, you know, one of his Sharpie notes, "Rich, you know, thank you very much, and I'm going to win the general too." You know, it just, there was never any doubt. And, you know, some of the criticisms of his style of politics and his coalition, and I know him well because I've made some of them myself, was 2016 was a little fluky, right? It didn't work in 2020, and the path was too narrow. It worked out once, probably couldn't work out again, and all that's just been blown away. He showed this coalition is potentially endurable, and it's gotten wider and deeper rather than shallower and thinner. So just an amazing night for him.
So there's a couple of things going to happen that's going to be really intriguing. Three things: analyzing the election, seeing him assemble his cabinet and his people, put everyone in place in the high profile positions, and see the Democrats tear each other's eyes out. Think about all the factions. You have George Clooney stepping up thanks to Barack Obama, stabbing Joe Biden in the back and deciding to make a character, to make a candidate switch. And then maybe Kamala Harris surprised everyone by consolidating delegates and being the candidate before they had a chance to go into a jungle primary. And then deciding for 107 days not to answer any legitimate questions. And when she gave bad answers on 60 Minutes, they changed the answers and made her look better. Had a debate, which she did fine. Trump did not do well. And he had ABC big help. So when it's all said and done, not only did they not win, they didn't get close. They lost everywhere that was contested. They lost. They're losing ground as a party with Asians. They closed the gap 57-38 with the American Jewish vote, who's at 43% for Republicans. The black vote up to 20%, judging by the poll you're looking at, voting for Republicans. The Republicans also are a blue collar party. Your party, Rich. Yep. It was a party they lined up steel workers behind him in Pennsylvania. Do you know what Kamala Harris did? She lined up Lady Gaga. And American people said, "I'll take the steel guys."
Yeah, exactly. Now, Brian, actually, I have a better answer to the first question you asked. Most surprising, holding his own in the suburbs after all this, after all the emphasis on suburban women and how they were going to swing the election, none of that happened. And the just extraordinary gains, you know, overperforming in the Bronx and in places like that, exactly because of the demographic changes that you're talking about. And this was always a promise inherent in a more working-class Republican party, was that it become not just the party of the white working class, but become the party of the working class, full stop, everyone in the working class. And we saw some of that coming to fruition last night, and continued gains among Latinos and gains among African-American men that really something to build on. And it's something, you know, could anyone else have done that except for Donald Trump? I'm not so sure.
You know why? He doesn't pander and say, what are black people like? What are Hispanic people like? He goes, what are working class like? What are middle class like? And, oh, working class? Yeah, they're taking black jobs, Hispanics. Oh, don't say that. No, but they are. Because there's more black working class than there is middle class and upper class. It's just the way it is. What do you mean I shouldn't say that? And guess who knows that? They know that. So I look at them as working class Americans. You want me to, you're making us look at people at black, white, Hispanic, upper class, lower class, middle class, upper middle class, suburbs, and everybody's like breaking up into micro targets. And that might help David Axelrod when he goes behind doors with David Plouffe. But for the American people, it's really destructive.
Yeah, and I think it's a huge message from a lot of Hispanic voters. They do not want to be a victimized minority, right? That's the way progressives look at them. That's what they want them to be. That'll put them, you know, right in with the rest of the identity politics coalition they've tried to build. And a lot of them just, no, we're Americans, we're patriots, we're Christians, and we care about the same issues as everyone else. Some of the polling in the course of this year, Brian, showed Hispanics cared more about the economy than white voters, right? So they're not different. And it goes to the point you're making that Trump didn't pander. And the thing I'm still trying to get my head around is there's still things he says that are really gaffes and would hurt anyone else. And they don't, I think, because one, they speak to an authenticity. So they kind of reinforce his appeal rather than detracting from it. And two, speak to having balls, which matters a lot to some of these new voters who've come in and also to a lot of women who aren't offended necessarily by someone right. saying they want to protect them when they actually, he wants to protect me from migrant gangs and from foreign adversaries. That's what he's saying. That's not a bad thing.
Here's Stephen Kornacki on MSNBC, broke down what he was seeing in New Jersey. Cut 33.
New Jersey, which in 2020 was a state that Joe Biden won by 16 points. But a couple things we can note here. I wanted to call your attention to this. Passaic County, the city of Paterson, New Jersey is here. Passaic is here. This is a plurality Hispanic county, working class Hispanic county, 42% Hispanic. Look at this. With just about all the vote in, Trump is leading in Passaic County. This was a 17-point Joe Biden victory in 2020. Trump has turned that around in leads here. And again, this is just as I look at this map, county by county across the country tonight, even outside of the swing states that we're concentrating on, I am seeing this over and over again. Counties with substantial Hispanic populations, that's where Trump is making his most dramatic gains.
And he's, you know, to him, he's trying to be fair, but they're also astounded. They're astounded. They said, I was watching CNN right before I went on the air this morning at 5 a.m. So CNN, I'm watching John Berman. And he said, well, what's going on with Illinois? We know that's a win. But he goes, but urban centers, the President Trump has gained. He goes, let's take a look at Chicago. Do you know that I guess Biden had 88% of the vote in Chicago? She had 60. That means a whole
amazing
group of people.
Maybe Jesse Smollett was right, and it is Trump country, Chicago.
Maybe he was right. He was telling the truth. Yeah, with that fake news around his neck.
Steve Kornacki is much fairer than a lot of them, and has put his finger on really important trends across the last year. But you know the amazing thing, Brian, right? If you after the first debate and the Democratic reaction against Biden, if you said, so what's the worst case scenario if Biden stays in? You would have said, he loses the popular vote, he loses every swing state, and he sees erosion in core Democratic areas. It happened. It happened with the candidate they switched to.
I know. That's why I can't wait to see the aftermath, because you can't say I know they're trying to say it's because he's a woman of color. Are you kidding me? That's more disrespect to the American people as disrespectful. This is my view, which I think is panning out. When I see Barack Obama come out with veins bursting out of his neck and forehead, scolding black males for not appreciating what their black mothers did for him and voting for Kamala Harris, I'm thinking to myself, really? Is this what did he see behind closed doors? And the word is, too, he lectures everybody. At one point, they're going to say it doesn't help to bring the Obamas out. Just to run through the Senate races, Sheehy is one. Baldwin is up by 0.8. Slotkin's up by 0.2 over Rogers. That would be such a shame. Baldwin over Hovde. McCormick is still up, and Brown is still up in Nevada. So they've been seen stuck at 95%, so I'm not sure what's going on right now. The stock market has hit an all-time high. I want you to look. You are not that surprised, it seems, by the result. Guess who is? All these people. Cut one.
In my humble view, lights out.
Please welcome back the next president of the United States.
I think it's going to be a blowout, actually. I don't think it's going to be a close race. I think there are going to be those Republicans that just vote for Harris.
We'll be tied on Election Day. As always, it will. The polls will be tied, and then he'll lose.
You call us trash? Oh, J.D. Vance, you just stepped up in a way that I've never seen in my political life, and I worked for Sarah Palin.
Then I would say take Harris over 270 electoral votes. Let these fools and these crypto markets do something. Let them drive the betting line into a favorable place and then take advantage of it. That's what I would do. I think she's going to win.
This month, you wrote Trump is toast. Do you stand behind that today?
Oh, even more so. I feel the same way that I felt a few weeks ago, that Trump is toast.
Oops, they were wrong. From Carville to Nicole Wallace to Bill Maher to Whoopi Goldberg to Sonny Hostin to Nicole Wallace, they are all dead wrong.
Yeah, so it's always a peril in this business to let what you want happen influence what you say is going to happen. And then also some of those people obviously feel an obligation to be optimistic and in public. But, yeah, they were wrong. This should have at least been a conceivable outcome, right? All the data showed it you just get a little bump one way or the other for one of these candidates, and you could get what we're seeing, kind of an electoral college landslide, at least in today's terms. But there were two big psyops, to use the term, at the end, Brian. One was the Puerto Rican joke and how that was going to swing Puerto Ricans. That was always seemed nonsense and just trying to create something out of nothing. It's proven that was actually true. It was actually nothing. And the Seltzer poll from Iowa showing Harris ahead by 3. Now, maybe we don't blame Ann Seltzer, who conducts that poll. You get a bad sample every now and then. But the way the media ran with it and made it like a two-day story and a sign of the whole thing was swinging Harris's way, obviously was a change, an attempt to make a narrative out of nothing.
Do you know what you're writing about?
I don't have to write today. I don't have to write until tomorrow. So I'll let
see what moves you.
Play out a little bit more.
All right. All right. Thanks so much, Rich Lowry, putting it all in perspective,
Brian.
This unprecedented time. Donald Trump wins going away, and his party is almost as successful as he is. Thanks to him. Donald Trump, big win. You'll hear from – I have some cuts from him last night. You probably missed it at 3 o'clock in the morning. We'll play some of that and then take your calls. 1-866-408-7669.
Covering this historic election like no other.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
This really was an historic, flawlessly run campaign. She had Queen Latifah never endorses anyone.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is a mandate. He's won the national popular vote for the first time since, for a Republican, for the first time since 2004. This is a big deal. This isn't backing into the office. This is a mandate to do what you said you were going to do. Get the economy working again for regular working class Americans. Fix immigration. Try to get crime under control. Try to reduce the chaos in the world. This is a mandate from the American people to do that. I think I'm interpreting the results tonight as the revenge of just a regular old working class American, the anonymous American who has been crushed, insulted, condescended to. They're not garbage. They're not Nazis. They're just regular people who get up and go to work every day and are trying to make a better life for their kids, and they feel like they have been told to just shut up when they have complained about the things that are hurting them in their own lives.
I think he's totally nailing it. That's Scott Jennings on CNN. That's what you're trying to say is, well, Donald Trump's is unacceptable and the economy's good and inflation's not going up as high and, the interest rates, well, that's to keep the economy down and we're getting paid more for hourly wage and well, people go, no, not really. And when it comes to crime, crime's going, no, I don't think so. Bidenomics is successful. Got an infrastructure deal. Well, I'm not feeling it. When it comes to cars, we're finally greening our economy. Really? At what price? I can't afford a electric car. Oh, I'll give you $20,000. Fine. Well, who owns a dealership? They're not happy. Who's a car maker? They're not happy. So the more then you have the Israeli conflict and you go halfway. I'm kind of back in Israel, giving them arms, but I'm going to be very critical of them to try to save the Michigan vote. Instead of Trump going in there, he says, yeah, I'm pro-Israel, but I'm pro-peace. What I'm going to do is, you ever hear these things called the Abraham Accords? Yeah. Well, that's what I did. I'm looking for peace. I'm looking for these guys to get along. And they said, okay, you know what? You're talking to us. They didn't even talk to us. So I'm just astounded by the American people collectively from all, from every state that don't even know each other, from different income brackets on down. Different races, different genders. They go, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not. And by the way, an undercurrent is we all know the president's failing cognitively, and you covered it up. And when we brought it up, you said we were crazy, and it was elder abuse or whatever they want to say. Lewis over in Florida. Hey, Lewis.
Hey, good morning. Tremendous, tremendous events. I've called before regarding what I thought was a paradigm shift coming with the Hispanic community, and very proud that the Puerto Rican community finally came up to bat in Allenton, in Osceola County, in Palm Beach County. And just some quick bullet points. The media does not know how to describe the Hispanic community. It's Hispanic. It's not Latino. Latino is a political term. It's a geographical term. Hispanics are 2,500-year word. There are 34 different separate ethnicities, not counting Puerto Rico. When you ask somebody where you come from, they don't say, I'm from Latin America or I'm Latin. Yeah. They say, I come from Colombia or Puerto Rico. So also, the word brown. So Hispanic, not Latin. That's a Democratic term. And B, brown. I have not in my entire life as an Hispanic heard anybody on our side call each other brown.
Good point.
It's an offense.
I know. And you know what? That should have been brought up earlier. Lewis, you taught me a lot just there. The other thing is, if you ever want Democrats to enforce the border, give the Hispanic vote to Donald Trump. Then they realize, oop, my plan is blowing up. He increased Hispanic vote by 6 points, by the black vote by 7 points, by young people by 10 points, non-college educated people by six. So he's up everywhere. That's why he had the resounding victory, waiting on a few more battleground states, but I don't think he's going to lose any of them. Gary in Daytona. Gary.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Just same as your last caller, a couple quick points. $1 billion could not make that Kamala be authentic. Dana White, boy, did he sum it up. And my last comment, Trey Gowdy, it sounded awkward. Said Biden, if he wants to help the Democrats, pardon Trump, pardon your son, and move on.
Interesting. You know, that's a law and order guy, too. His son's going to get pardoned by his dad, and no one's going to say a thing, even though he said repeatedly he wouldn't. Number two is President Trump has got to stand for sentencing in New York. President-elect Trump has got to stand for sentencing in New York. A bogus case so bad, even the Democrats wouldn't bring it up again. They stopped, as you notice, calling him a felon because people were getting ticked off. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
You wrote Trump is toast. Do you stand behind that today?
Oh, even more so.
I would say Kate Harris over 270 electoral votes. I think she's going to win.
He'll be tied on Election Day. As always, it will. The polls will be tied, and then he'll lose.
This is the biggest red wave I've seen since Ronald Reagan's 49-state victory in 1984.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
Republicans steamrolled. They have captured the Senate. The House still up for grabs, but those close to Speaker Johnson think the Republicans are on track to have that as well.
We have to acknowledge that Donald Trump knows our country better than we do.
This will forever be remembered as the day the American people regained control of their country.
And I think that we just witnessed the greatest political comeback in the history of the United States of America.
That is a little montage there without the big three, Eric and Pete and Allison going to town on great montages to get our hours started from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where last night around 1 o'clock there were huge pro-Hezbollah, get this, pro-Hezbollah anti-Israeli riots. Hezbollah flags right on 49th Street and 6th Avenue outside our studio. Good luck with that. I'm pretty sure you got some mixed messages here. I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be hanging terrorist flags anywhere. I don't know why we got lenient with that. Bill Crane at the bottom of the hour. He might not know his name, but he's a political analyst that really knows the South better than anyone I know. Former communications staffer for two U.S. senators, one governor, both major political parties. And again, you'll have to trust me by my text messages. He nailed this whole election. Ben Domenech also here, providing great insight, Fox News contributor, editor-at-large for The Spectator, host of the Ben Domenech podcast. Ben, welcome back. I mean, a runaway victory. All battleground states are in the process of going to the former president. Are you surprised that when I got on the air at 5 a.m., we were the only network to call it?
I was surprised, actually, because I think that the writing was so clear and in black and white there. And I just think that the other networks were, they took a shock to the system in terms of what they were expecting. But you know what?
Because it wasn't close.
You know, Brian, the thing is, I've been saying this for about a week. And so people who can, you know, go back and they can listen and they can, you know, look at clips to prove it. But I've been saying for more than a week now, people were under-indexing the possibility of something like last night. And the reason is, I think that the media writ large, they lost the forest for the trees. They started obsessing about teeny tiny things. They spent a week talking about an insult comics remark at MSG instead of paying attention to the fact that the American people have been really consistent from day one within this election cycle about how frustrated they are with the economy, right, how frustrated they are with immigration, how frustrated they are about security. And Kamala Harris, you know, once again proving she's just a terrible candidate. And the choice that was made by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to go with her over Joe Biden, ultimately, I think even though I do believe that Joe Biden would have lost, I think they might be looking at a better situation in the Senate races. I think that they might have done better in some of these situations. I don't think you necessarily see a Bob Casey going down in Pennsylvania as it looks to be happening if Joe Biden's at the top of that ticket. But he's not there, and now he's got to just be laughing because it's a total vindication for him in terms of his perspective.
You know him better, Ben, and especially his friends with the McCain family. I thought he had a great moment on when Megan was on The View, and she was upset her dad was battling cancer. And she got upset, and he got up on that desk, and I go, wow, he's a real sincere guy. If I saw more of that, but Joe Biden now is the angriest person in the world.
He really is.
And he was out of control every time he was in front of the camera. So the meltdown would have been unbelievable. And I don't know, the Wall Street Journal started to write the story about his failings. Now, you know, Bob Woodward's writing it too.
Yeah.
In his book, how about he would freeze in front of donors.
Yeah.
So you're not just telling an 82-year-old not to run. An 82-year-old couldn't do it.
Yes, and I think that the problem that they faced, it was a problem, though, that I think that they needed to either work on earlier or they would just have to make their peace with it. And instead, what you ended up with is this forcible elevation of Kamala Harris. I think one of the big lessons we take away from this is you need somebody who's won a primary in order to have them actually run for the presidency, someone who's built up the kind of support that's necessary through that process.
Would you say support also skills?
Skills, basic skills and basic ability to answer the questions that are put in front of her. You know, you mentioned The View. Isn't it incredible to think about this critical moment, if you're going to look back at one of the critical moments in this cycle, where she's asked by Sonny Hostin to name something that she would have done differently than Joe Biden, and she has no answer.
No answer.
And if you can't answer that question, why are you even running? Why are you running for president if you can't answer that question? And she never could. She never convinced the American people that she was anything different. And that's why she ended up underperforming across the board, across the country.
There's a few things that are going to be written about this, and my audience has heard me say this. Who told them to do the debate in June? How did they play this out perfect? They knew Trump would say yes, or they think he was going to say no. And was it somebody who knew how he was cognitively failing that wanted to put him in a situation where he couldn't succeed?
I think it's very likely that that was the case, Brian. I think we'll find out in the future, you know, as some of these stories can finally be told. But, you know, for the Democrats, this is just a total rebuttal. It's a total rebuttal of their entire view of this country. Their entire approach to policy, their DEI-based, their woke-based priorities.
Right.
And it's also, I think, in a very healthy way,
right,
a rebuttal of the idea that you can get away with playing these race-based games in order to win various coalitions as right. opposed to meeting people and their priorities where they are.
Can you imagine if there was a legitimate candidate that was running like she was pretending to run? She was going to be tough on crime. She was going to be tough on the border. She was going to let everybody thrash, right?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Why all of a sudden? Because you just ran from everything that you were and your party was in 2020. I want for people that weren't up at 3 in the morning to hear a little of Donald. I want to get your take, too. Donald Trump's tone after winning.
Yeah.
This is the ultimate revenge. This is the moment he should have been high-fiving, and I told you so. But Trump, again, is different. Cut two.
Frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal. We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly.
So I watched him. And I bring this all the way back. Do you remember the Washington Correspondents' Dinner when Barack Obama called him out and
then
Seth Meyers piled on?
The original moment.
And do you remember he just stared?
Yeah.
And I went, okay. And then he left early after they were done. And people want to point back to that moment, and he won't do it. Like, if I asked him right now, was that the moment? He'll go, no, not really. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
And then here's another moment where he could go, yeah, I completed the deal. I told you I could do it. I do it. You see him, J.D. Vance says, you just created the greatest comeback ever. He looks, turns around, looks at Donald Trump, and he goes, just nods his head, winks. So isn't that interesting? Well, for a guy that's always calling attention to himself in a way, and a moment where he actually deserves more than you could ever give him. Thanks, I got it. I have to say it.
Well, but I think that's also a sign that I think he was a lot more confident than people really understood going into this election. I think that he knew that if he hit his marks, if he did it right, that he would be able to do something that has never been done before. And that's the kind of ambition that he has, you know, as an individual that's allowed him to survive through just a heinous series of lawfare attacks and everything else that we've seen from him. And there's one other element of this that I think was really interesting. You know, when that number came back, when these early both, you know, the numbers that we had in terms of our internal Fox numbers and the numbers that you see in other exit polls about this question on democracy and how, you know, the Democrats assumed that, like, that's going to be a stand-in for us. You know, if people say democracy is on the ballot, that's a good thing for us. As it turns out, that's not the case. In fact, you know, there was almost an even split there. And I think that's because a lot of Republicans understood real threats to democracy. They come from the people who want to get rid of the filibuster. They want to pack the Supreme Court. They want to engage in all of this craziness. They want to pervert the way that our intelligence services work. They want to pervert the way the Department of Justice works to go after their political opponents. And you're saying that's normal to me? And I think that for him to have gone through all of that, to have survived that, to come out at the other end of it and not to just be spiking the football, to your point, you know, I think that shows a good deal of restraint. And I hope that it's an indication of the way that he's going to approach this second term, which is about getting things done, not about settling grudges or the like. As tempting as that's going to be for him, I understand it. There are reforms that need to happen, but this needs to be about what will benefit the American people, what will benefit the country, and what we need in so many different aspects, not just about those settling those scores.
So what I find good, I think, is good for the country. Democrats might not feel that way, but I do. You no longer could say the black vote goes to Democrats, so forget about it. Yep. Hispanic vote goes to Democrats, so forget about it. So focus on white, married women, soccer moms, whatever it is. So now they go, no. So only 60% of the people in Chicago voted for Kamala Harris. Joe Biden had 89%.
Yeah.
I mean, this was happening. You know, in the Hispanic vote in Miami-Dade, first time ever a president wins the Hispanic vote in Miami-Dade. And it's not just Cubans. Mm-hmm. People have told me the breakdown's a lot different. This is going to be real. Like, we're going to try to get the Americans' vote.
Yes.
Instead of black, white people, transgenders who only go to college for 2 years. Can we just win people's vote?
Yes. I think that this is something that gets back to, you know, things that people who are on, you know, the right of center, people, conservatives have been talking about for a very long time. Why are we playing this ridiculous game that Democrats play of trying to break people down according to their victim group, according to their racial group, according to their categorization? Why aren't we viewing them as Americans?
Yeah, working class.
Working class Americans, voting Americans, patriotic Americans, and who we should have, you know, an agenda on the American right that appeals to all of these people as opposed to being something that's just about these targeted rifle shots. And that's, to me, I think, something that is really impressive about what was achieved here. It is truly the greatest political comeback that we've ever seen in American history.
Right. So in case you want to, the former press secretary to Joe Biden, Jen Psaki, is now on MSNBC. So they're looking at this coming in, and they did not declare for Trump yet. But I watched this morning. I think, to her credit, this is as balanced as you could see a staffer get. Cut 13.
I think there's no other way to describe how people are feeling leaving that venue and people on the campaign than deflated in this moment. Yes, yeah. All of the other states have not been called. But what they went to that venue tonight hoping to see and witness was a historic election of Kamala Harris to the presidency, was the end of the Trump era as they knew it. And so we don't know the outcome yet, but that is not what they are receiving. And they are being told to go home and wait till tomorrow.
Number one, how insulting. You lost.
Okay.
You stated.
Why you saw this happen with Hillary. Why are you playing out the same thing? This is terrible. Like, I mean, at least have the guts to go out there and talk to these people. But look, this is again, this is an indictment of the way that the the legacy media has pulled the wool over the eyes of the Democrats for so long. And I think back
of
to
the American public.
Of the American public. And basically, the when it comes to the way they set their agenda and their priorities, et cetera, it is the far left radicals within the media. It is people who are completely out of touch with the American public, who see the world through a completely different lens. And in when they have something like this happen, most of them, rather than looking in the mirror and saying, maybe I should reconsider things, maybe I should be disabused of my assumptions, instead they say, no, it's the voters who are wrong. And, you know, they're the ones who are wrong. We just needed to market this better. We just didn't tell them enough that Donald Trump was a danger to democracy.
But I saw Michael Steele this morning, too, and he said, this is time to totally rebuild. What we were saying, no one's believing.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to sell them, no one was buying.
Yeah.
Because this is what, Ben, and you came in here and say, you know, I'm so glad we got a verdict with a popular vote in the Electoral College, because yes. I think the Electoral College is important.
Me too.
And I want to keep it. So now you just wiped out a huge argument to do it. So having said that, when the door closes, and maybe the smartest people, they say it's David Puff and David Axelrod, and they go in the room, they're going to have to say, we have to change our approach to this.
Yeah.
Donald, just saying Donald Trump is unacceptable and a horrible and Hitler not only didn't work, it worked against us. You can say whatever you want to tell, but when that door closes, you know these people. They're your friends.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things where you understand that there's a lot of smart people that they have within their party. They have a lot of smart folks who've worked very hard to, you know, understand the country and get people elected. But they just completely missed it on this one, completely. And I think it's
it because it's Trump and they just say there's no one people can vote
is.
For him?
I think it's that they are so – their Trump derangement syndrome sent them in such a spiral. They couldn't see any situation in which someone would want to vote for him. And I still think – I mean, talking to many of my – I have a lot of kind of contrarian liberal friends who are people who are – you know, a liberal up and down the line, but maybe they don't agree with the trans agenda stuff, for instance, you know, or they have issues with the way that the borders are being handled. But even they couldn't see a situation where something like this would be the result. And I hope that now they will sit down and reconsider, what are we getting wrong? How can we get things back to being a more centrist party? They need something as significant, I think, on the Democratic Party as a reset as they've seen since 1992.
You know what I want? If Harold Ford ran for president against Tom Cotton or something next, okay. If I saw the debate, a civil debate, the waltz debate with J.D. Vance,
mm-hmm.
all right, hey, guys, that was a pretty good point, but that's not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I want to get back to that.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think we can, don't you?
I think Americans do want to get back to that. They very much want to get back to that. But instead, the machine that we've seen within the media landscape and within the radical progressive left that is so loud, despite the fact that they do not represent in any way a majority of the country or their party – they have been controlling the narrative for so long on the left, and that has to change for them to change.
More genius. If you want to get more of the Ben Domenech genius, it is can be found on the Ben Domenech podcast.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be with
you. Did you dress for me? I didn't think so.
I was on with Stuart Varney.
There you go.
But yes. Hey,
you
man,
could have lied to me.
I'm rushing through, man. I did the full 3 a.m. thing, so I'm just happy to be here and be fully functional.
3 a.m. is the new noon.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Back in a moment.
Covering this historic election like no other.
The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
We're tired of leaders that think we're garbage, and we're tired of being treated like garbage.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We don't exactly know what all the results are going to be. Our time is running out. I do want to very quickly send a quick message to all the pollsters, the election pollsters. Me. I don't ever want to from you again, ever. I don't ever want to hear, we've corrected for the overcorrection of the voters. You don't know about and I don't care for you. We'll figure it out next time. Plus or minus, we were in the margin of me.
So that was, really, I watched the whole thing with Jon Stewart. He was coming to the end of the show, and it was just so clear. I guess he gets off the air at midnight. So clear that they weren't His people weren't going to win, and they were totally wrong. And he really had nothing to say. And he was just exasperated, but he talked about 2004. Everyone thought 2008, what everyone thought with 2012. And he just can't make sense of it. And I think a lot of people listening right now want to be mad and want to be mad at someone. But the cross-section of people that provided this landslide victory for President Trump is so pervasive, and a lot of them fall into categories in which they're in. They have to ask themselves, what am I missing? Like, for example, the media. Do you know, according to the Media Research Center, 78% of all the Democratic coverage on Kamala Harris has been positive. Do you know the average positive coverage for Donald Trump? 15. And what did Donald Trump win? He's going to end up with over 300 electoral votes and taking every battleground state. Hey, kids, nobody's listening to you.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're going to make you very happy. We're going to make you very proud of your vote. I hope that you're going to be looking back someday and say that was one of the truly important moments of my life when I voted for this group of people beyond the president, this group of great people. America has given us an unprecedented and powerful mandate.
So President Trump last night, 3 in the morning, had to be around 2:45 a.m., had to be exhausted, but you couldn't tell. He was kept to the prompter, saluted his family, friends, everybody else, and said he basically can't wait to go back and fix the country. For those who think, well, it was another tight victory. America's so divided. Not if you look at the numbers. Not if you look at the battleground states and you compare them to previous results. Not if you look at what people are saying and this outright rejection of the wokeism that's taken place, jammed down our throats since 2020. Bill Crane joins us now, political analyst, a former communication staffer for two U.S. senators, one governor, and both major political parties. He's got a weekly syndicated column entitled One Man's Opinion. But, Bill, your opinion is worth a lot more. You mapped this out for me in the morning of yesterday, Tuesday morning. What gave you an indication that Trump was in his way to a victory, especially in Georgia?
In Georgia, living here most of my entire life, I've traveled the state a pretty good bit in my work. And even though Vice President Harris did a very solid turnout and in some cases bested Joe Biden's numbers in the five core large counties in Metro Atlanta, piling up about 1.25 million votes there, everywhere I drove in Georgia, Trump country, Trump Vance country, Trump Vance, and you would see states for U.S. Senate candidates, signs for U.S. Senate candidates in adjoining states in Georgia. It told me for the first time, and I wasn't sure I believed it until I saw it in action, but it was showing up in the early voting and it was showing up in the polling. The Republican Party has not had a machine like the one that Stacey Abrams built in Georgia with Fair Fight Georgia and the Georgia Voter Project of identifying prospective voters that aligned with their philosophy, like the 850,000 new voters that voted in Georgia that had not voted in 2020, and built the list and got them to the polls. And, of course, they don't use the same methodology. They don't bus people in, and they don't go to schools and sign up 17-and-a-half-year-olds. But they found, whether you agree or disagree with some of the issues that they're strongly supported, people gravely concerned about immigration, people gravely concerned about our economy, people that still believe that the crime and public safety are at the top of any citizen's list, whether they're Republican, Democratic, independent. And that's a coalition. And that's a new shape in face, and we'll see how long it does last. But for the Republican Party, and it pulled in independents, according to exit polling data, right. I don't put a great deal of faith in that, 41% of Hispanic vote in the country, 15% of all African-American voters, not African-American men. That's a very, very unusual coalition for the GOP and Donald Trump and the third parties they hired in the state party organizations. And I called it mostly right, but not 100% right. It looks like he's going to sweep all seven battleground states. I gave him five.
Yeah, you have in Georgia especially 50 to 48.5 right now. It's flipped, and Trump on top. How come did Trump and Kemp work well together? Because I'm thinking to people, there was coordination. Do you really think they ended up really teaming up?
Governor Kemp didn't appear in any Trump rallies, but they did events together. He endorsed him. He campaigned for him. He gave him money. His organization, I think, was part of that bodies across the country that helped identify and turn that vote out. And it's in Brian Kemp's best interest, too. He has future aspirations beyond being governor through a second term in 2026. And the Georgia General Assembly had some incumbents in the state house particularly, but they all had a few in the state Senate. They expanded their majorities in both legislative chambers yesterday. And every congressional incumbent was reelected. And there were some ballot referenda that were important to the GOP that passed on the bottom of the ballot. And then some local referenda the GOP felt strongly against that were shut down. So it was a marriage of political expediency, I'd say.
Yep.
I don't see him having a beer tomorrow or having a sandwich. But again, a Republican Party that requires forging some alliances that might be unusual. And I hope to see it stay, not necessarily that they're going to be best friends. And I think Burt Jones is probably our lieutenant governor here closer to Donald Trump. And he certainly got a leg up for his campaign in 2026 for governor. But Brian Kemp, I think, has in many ways throughout this 4-year period since 2020 demonstrated you can disagree with somebody and literally somebody can be attacking you, but you can still see for the party and for the country that this candidate's the better choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, Governor Kemp, I think on some level, wants to see maybe he's got presidential aspirations. And if you want to do that, you don't want to start off having the MAGA world not like you. So, and
yeah,
if you didn't
like
do anything.
Nikki Haley kind of came around to the backside. She wants to do something later. Whether the MAGA Republicans will agree or see that as a possibility, that remains to be seen. But she got in line.
Listen to Jake Tapper last night, Cut 12.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
So you asked, are there any places that the vice president is overperforming Joe Biden in 2020? So we can show you that as well. We just bring that out here. Harris overperforming 2020.
Holy smokes.
There you go. So let this go away and see if there's anything in the east side there.
Literally nothing?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
By 3% or more.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, I thought that was incredible, but as you know, looking at the popular vote, which people will start getting around to being agog about later today, it looks like, again, as the polls are still being tabulated, Donald Trump may end up winning the popular vote by 7 to 10 million. And in places like New York State and New York City and the outer boroughs of the Bronx and Chicago, Illinois, he beat his numbers were better than they were in 2020. And in the case of New York State and California and Illinois, in each of those three states, he closed the gap that he had 4 years ago by almost a million votes.
It is amazing. But at the same time, so we watch this as all the years you've been doing this, Bill, you've never seen anything like Donald Trump. And I remember if you have a small gaffe, it could derail your whole campaign. Every other day, they were examining his hour and a half speeches and finding out something that was absolutely unacceptable, sexist, racist, misogynist, something. And that would be the worst thing. And that would run all day in all the networks. And I just read before you came on, the Media Research Center came out and said almost 80% of the stories on Harris and Democrats were positive. Only 15% were positive for Trump. 15. And yet he wins the popular vote and as what is getting close to be a landslide or a complete battleground victory sweep. What do you think the media should take from this?
In the same way, I hope that we see more of the Donald Trump who was somewhat magnanimous, didn't attack his opponent, didn't turn his victory speech into grievances on parade. I hope the national legacy media outlets and a lot of our colleagues are introspective here and see the American people didn't heed our warnings, didn't listen to us, and certainly in some of their ingracious commentary in the immediate aftermath of Donald Trump's victory this early morning.
Ethically,
they can make themselves dinosaurs. They can talk themselves out of business. And in the same way that Donald Trump will have to govern and in some cases will have to reach out across the aisle and will have to occasionally compromise because the majorities they have in the Senate and apparently the House aren't bulletproof, I hope it creates a need and a path to build some bridges. I pray. I'm an American. I'd like to see us be more civil to one another. I'm a parent. I'm a grandparent.
Yep.
I'm really tired of the animosity and the divide. It ain't going to go away tomorrow.
But let's start taking steps in the right direction.
Hey, Bill, just ethically, historically, I mean, are you surprised with this type of victory that the Harris camp, she went to bed and there's no word yet if she's going to concede at all? We remember Hillary Clinton got a call from President Obama and said, "You got to concede, Hillary, you lost." And she did, but she didn't want to. This time, Kamala Harris has it. What do you think?
They could claim the moral high ground for the last 18 months and say Donald Trump would only accept an election result that he liked, that she can't be somewhat, if nothing else, gracious to her supporters and have a concession speech that basically thanks those who were with her for their support. And I don't see how she doesn't preside over the certification of the Electoral College vote the same way Al Gore had to do for George W. Bush in a very, very hard-fought contest that went on for almost 2 months into December in 2000.
Right. I mean, there's nothing to fight. I mean, there's no corruption. No one's saying that there were problems with the ballot box. No one's saying there's a problem with tabulation. No one's saying that Wisconsin didn't fall, Pennsylvania didn't fall. It looks like Michigan is going to do the same thing. You know, I could go on and on. I mean, I never
thought I'd say take a lesson in civility from Mark Cuban, but
yeah,
Mark
and
Cuban
I think that's great.
Already,
I was about to do that. You're a genius. He says this. Congrats, Donald Trump. He tweeted this out. You won fair and square. He said, congrats to Elon Musk as well. Hashtag Godspeed. Unbelievable.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
That's the peaceful transition of power and get ready for the next one.
And I've always said, in America, you got to learn to lose because most of us go through our life not getting the house, not getting the job, not getting into the school you want. How you respond to that defines who you are. And
right.
People
it's
get
not,
disappointed.
It's not that you take the punch. It's what you do after you take the punch and when you get knocked down that you stand up, dust yourself off, and move forward. That's,
exactly.
I won't say that's a man, but that's what a person is supposed to do if they're standing up for themselves, their family, their faith.
Right.
Take the things and move on.
So having said that, just your prediction on I forgot the etiquette. The sitting president who didn't run, does he call the president-elect and say, would you like a tour? I know Trump didn't do it, and that was a problem, but to Biden. But do you do that?
I think for Joe Biden, there's a little – I'm not saying he's gleeful at this outcome, but there's certainly an I told you so in here. And he and Trump had civil moments the morning of the 9/11 anniversary, 8 weeks ago? I think he may not get an acceptance, and I'm not sure he has a lot he can show Donald Trump because Donald Trump's kind of familiar with the Oval Office. But I think the phone call will come kind of Clinton-esquely, if I could be of assistance. and I think Donald Trump should be gracious if that call comes.
He will be. And there's no doubt about it. If the call comes, he will be. I remember he got the call after he got shot. So what do you need? Give you everything you need. And I thought that was good. But then we found out what happened later.
Bill, he did remove the head of the Secret Service.
Bill, that's true. Bill, someday there's going to be a book written that tells us really what happened in detail behind the scenes of his ouster, her taking over, the problems behind the scenes when she took some of his people, some of her people, some of Obama's people, and then they put together a terrible campaign without
Frank
substance.
And Kane.
Yeah, true.
Franking pain. Yeah.
And then we're going to find out soon what's going to happen. That's going to be almost as exciting as Trump assembling his cabinet. Bill Crane, always great. Thanks for your analysis.
Take care, Brian.
You
Thanks
got it.
Let me join with your guests.
Absolutely. Bill Crane, read what he writes and follow him on all his podcasts. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show, and we come back. I'll be by the way, I'm going out numbered at the top of the hour. I'll be the man wearing what I'm wearing now if you're watching on Fox Nation. But next is your calls, 1-866-408-7669, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this historic election like no other.
This will forever be remembered as the day the American people regained control of their country.
We did it, Joe.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A lot of people are asking, like, how'd Trump get more votes than he got last time? Well, here's the answer. Because people like myself, independents or moderates, the Democrats gave us no choice. The Democrats gave us no choice. That was the worst campaign, and their pure arrogance and their moral superiority have driven people away. If you say you're voting for Trump, suddenly you're a Nazi, you're Hitler, you're garbage. Enough. Enough. Like, yeah, I'm sure there's racists in the party, just like there's crazy people and racists in the Democratic Party, all right? But millions and millions and millions and millions of people voted for Trump. He won clear. He won decisive. So when you call us that and when you say that, you're calling the majority of the country racist, Hitlers, Nazis. I don't think you get the words of what that means. You are alienating all this middle ground people by acting like you're better than us, smarter than us, and frankly, insulting our intelligence. Trump's the threat to democracy. That was the entire Democratic campaign.
No kidding. And then when the first thing came in from the exit polls, everyone was giddy on CNN. I go, what's going on here? Well, number one, they're only winning Ohio by 2, and they're barely winning Florida by 4. And the number one question of what made the decision you make when it comes to candidates, they say democracy. Okay, that ends up being right. And of course, it was a runaway in Ohio, and it was the biggest division I think that I can remember for a Republican in Florida, double digits. But it was 50-50. 50% feared the Democrats, if they won, were going to destroy democracy. And 50% thought that Donald Trump was going to destroy democracy. They wiped each other out. So move down the list. The next one is the economy / inflation. Third is abortion. Number 4 is immigration. I can tell you right now, a lot of people saw 1,000 people streaming towards our border, another caravan right now. And I think that matters a lot. Nicole, you're in California. We're in California, Nicole.
Yes. Hello. I just wanted to call because I called you 8 years ago on my way to work because I was so excited and I work in education and I'm not going to be able to celebrate at work. And you were talking about the protesters, like, he's not my president, blah, blah, blah. And I called and said that the vote was our protest. And I'm calling again 8 years later to say, again, the vote was our protest. And we did it, and I'm so happy. And I am a Californian, and California, I swear, is going red.
Well, I'll tell you what, that proposition to reform criminal justice and put repeat offenders behind bars, mandatory drug counseling for drug users, felonies actually go to prison, that passed. So if California's getting tough on crime, stop. They're the people that gave us the smash and grab. I mean, that's a great sign for the country, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's more. I think this election is going to bring more people out of the shadows. I think people are, like you said earlier, we're sick of being called racist. We're sick of being called like his Nazi followers, you know. It's time. And I think it's going to be, amazing. The Dodgers won the World Series and, Trump won.
Right. I like the first half I didn't love, because I'm in New York. And even though the Dodgers deserved it, I went to game 4 and the Yankees were dead. Even though it was their last game, they ended up winning that. But I'm like, how could you come out flat knowing that this is already one loss and you're done? But congratulations, Nicole. Thanks for being such a loyal listener. Alex in Brooklyn. Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. And actually, I think the Harris campaign overall had the right strategy because she couldn't run on policy. So fear-mongering was the only choice she had here. But I was really surprised with the results. I didn't think it would be so great for Trump. And I think it had to do a lot with not just the Trump campaign workers. I think it had to do with individual people in different communities around the United States that were fed up with the Biden administration. And I thought it was only with the people that I knew that were so enthusiastic or the people that I spoke to. But I guess it was all over the United States in every community. It was the most diverse election, I think, in our history.
It's encouraging, right? And by the way, it looks like Dave McCormick is going to pull out the Pennsylvania Senate seat.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
You wrote Trump is toast. Do you stand behind that today?
Oh, even more so.
I would say take Harris over 270 electoral votes. I think she's going to win.
Be tied on election day. As always, it will. The polls will be tied, and then he'll lose.
This is the biggest red wave I've seen since Ronald Reagan's 49-state victory in
1984.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
Republicans steamrolled. They have captured the Senate. The House still up for grabs, but those close to Speaker Johnson think the Republicans are on track to have that as well.
We have to acknowledge that Donald Trump knows our country better than we do.
This will forever be remembered as the day the American people regained control of their country.
And I think that we just witnessed the greatest political comeback in the history of the United States of America.
And that is J.D. Vance, the vice president-elect. And that happened last night at Fox. I'm Brett Baer. You know the exact time. You're chief political anchor, after all. You're a Fox News anchor. Check your business card. You're all these things. You're an anchor of Special Report. You do weeknights at 6 o'clock, best-selling author. And last night, handling our election coverage, when you made the announcement, and you made it,
yes.
What time was it?
Sometime after 2.
You don't know the exact time?
I mean, I don't have it by the minute, but it was
like 2:20.
Yeah, about 2:15.
All right. So what was behind the scenes for that? Were you like, how long were we waiting? Pennsylvania's in the column. Was it Pennsylvania that did it?
It was Pennsylvania, and that took out the path for her. Once you put together Alaska and Maine, she was at 266, and then she would make it to 270. So it was done. It was cooked.
What do you mean Maine? Maine went to her.
No, I know the one congressional district.
Oh, went to him.
So 3-1. Alaska was 3 electoral votes, 1. And so that would have been 4. 266 plus 4 is 270. So even if he didn't win any other states in the blue wall, he would have gotten to 270. So at that point, we know it's happening. That comes down as we're just coming back and re-queuing. We set up this board to say, here's where we are with Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. And then the check mark went in as we were doing that. And so it was real time. And we made that call real time to Pennsylvania.
So the check mark is automated by our election division?
Yeah, the decision desk.
So did they tell you if they didn't tell you first?
No.
Is that usual?
No.
Okay. I'm sorry I've asked you so many questions because I've never worked election.
It's not. It's actually what happened last time with a state that begins with A.
Right.
And that's what happened last time. But this time it was, you know, we had planned for it to eventually happen, but it happened real time, live on air. Then we made the call for Pennsylvania. I said there is no path for Vice President Harris, and he will be the 47th president of the United States. And then a short time later, we made the final call on Wisconsin, and that made it official going over 270.
I will say that I was at home just texting with the people I know in the Trump camp, and they wanted you guys to call states earlier. They're like, what is going on? Why is North Carolina not done? Why is this pen? There's no way to pen. I go, listen, what's the sense of being first? Let's just be right. And
yeah, they were waiting on some vote. I mean, they had specific reasons. There was like Atlanta. There was Wake County in North Carolina. So it wasn't like we were dragging our feet. And then
we were
first by a while for Pennsylvania and Wisconsin.
How about this? You were first by a while and you called the presidency. So in my mind, so I'm up at 2. See it happen. I shower. I didn't repeat because I wanted to get with the shampoo. I just wanted to get in. I made one choice.
Yeah. Is it a Prel? Is it a?
They don't do Prel anymore.
Oh yeah.
Pert. I do Pert. Pert. So all right. So I go in. I don't have the body I could possibly have had in my head. So and I'm going in. I go, oh my goodness. I never thought that. Like I checked the other channels and I'm like, oh, they seem kind of like not not like resigned. They haven't. All of a sudden I realized no one's called it.
No one called it for a long time.
And then I see John Berman on CNN say, ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement. I go, good. Right before I hop on the air, I have an announcement. New Jersey is now in Harris's column. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So New Jersey isn't. By the way, it took a long time. That's a story, too, isn't it?
It is.
New Jersey, Virginia, yeah. New Hampshire.
Look at the New York number. Look at the Bronx number.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Illinois.
Didn't he have a rally there?
Yeah. Look at Illinois. These are historic numbers. This is why he's likely going to win the popular vote, which, you know, it repudiates all the stuff about the Electoral College should be thrown out. It's, you know, rigged because of the Electoral College.
Right.
He's going to likely win the popular vote. And the coattails that he has and taking these Senate candidates across the finish line, Bernie Moreno, I think Dave McCormick's going to win. Mike Rogers in Michigan.
Tim Sheehy.
Sam Brown could win in Nevada. It's very close, but he could.
And I was talking to Ben Dominich. He says they've been. He was starved for money.
They were pouring money into Larry Hogan, but not putting any money into his race.
Yeah.
I want you to hear just a little of the other commentary while you were on. Jen Psaki, I think did a really good job considering how personally she's involved in this.
Right.
It's tough. Cut 13.
I think there's no other way to describe how people are feeling leaving that venue and people on the campaign than deflated in this moment. Yes, yeah. All of the other states have not been called. But what they went to that venue tonight hoping to see and witness was a historic election of Kamala Harris to the presidency,
yeah.
Was the end of the Trump era as they knew it. And so we don't know the outcome yet, but that is not what they are receiving. And they are being told to go home and wait till tomorrow.
I mean, it was almost exact mirror image of John Podesta in 2016 telling the crying crowd to go home and get rest and we'll fight tomorrow, where we were going to call it. You know, it just is a matter of time for Hillary Clinton to lose. And she did at 3 a.m. in 2016.
What did Barack Obama do? Made Hillary call. He said, you got to call and concede.
And where was Barack Obama this time? Vice President Harris should have called overnight. She did not. And we're being told it's going to be 5, 6 p.m. today before she makes a speech.
Wow. Is that true? Did you got that official?
Yeah.
5 or 6?
Yeah. I mean, that's a long time. And I just don't think it's a good look as far as a concession. Listen, what just happened was a massive mandate. It was a pushback by average Americans,
yes,
saying we are not for this woke BS. We actually are hurting economically. We don't like the border situation. No, don't tell us about all this other garbage, to use the word. We don't want all of that.
How about crime?
Crime.
Don't tell me again crime's going down. I know it's not.
It's in my neighborhood. You can't tell me what I don't feel. That is what this is. It's a repudiation. And there is something, I don't know, it's inherently good that the system has a pushback lever, that if there is frustration, that the American people can do this. That right. is what our system is about.
So what is pretty amazing is that everybody told us the opposite. You know, the media research group said 15% of Donald Trump's coverage has been positive, 15, and for her, 78% has been positive. I mean, don't tell me you're even trying to be balanced, and he still won all these states. At the end of the day, you wonder, did someone turn off my bullhorn? Because nobody's listening.
No one's listening.
So at one point, when you close the door, unless someone's inextricably biased, you close that door and say, what is my business plan? Because all my commentators, all my news anchors, they keep telling everybody one thing, how horrible this person is. He's a criminal.
Fascist.
And in the end, he's fascist. He's more popular than ever. Just the opposite of what we're saying.
It is such a repudiation of the mainstream media and the industrial media complex that I don't think we're going to fully grasp it for a number of days, maybe in weeks, because I'm talking, it was like a blowtorch, fascist, Nazi. MSG rally was like a Nazi, you know, rally in 1939. The lawfare stuff, convicted felon when he's introduced, you know, in different shows. There are some shows I'm not sure what content they're going to go with for the rest of the time because they're going to run out of things.
I know. On some level, they're going to be the opposition, but they should be.
They may have saved them.
Yeah,
they may have saved them, actually.
But if you keep on going crazy and overstating things, just so you know, you're probably going to end up, you're going against people that give him almost 300 electoral votes. Now you can honestly say he's the more popular candidate. And now you could say it's not just Donald Trump. It's the people that so we're loyal to him, so the Senate and the House. Well, I'd be curious to see what you're going to say with the House. But just so you know, and you gave me an indication of this, it's happening a lot, but been on the air from 5. I know you have no sympathy, but I'm just telling you, I've been kind of locked out of other networks.
But your hair looks great.
But it doesn't have the body.
It doesn't have the body.
if you can keep that between us, I appreciate it. Here is David Axelrod, Cut 24.
Let's be absolutely blunt about it. There were appeals to racism in this campaign, and there is racial bias in this country, and there is sexism in this country. And anybody who thinks that that did not in any way impact on the outcome of this race is wrong. I'm not saying that was the main reason that Kamala Harris lost and Donald Trump won. And I think they ran honestly, strategically, his campaign. And I've said it many times. They ran a very smart campaign. It was an ultimately rational, well-conceived, and well-executed campaign for an irrational, often irrational candidate, and they overcame him to sell his message, or the message that they thought he should be selling to the country.
Which is everything that you guys were doing wrong, from letting open the border to letting crime run free to running up the deficit and putting in, making inflation a major factor. And remember, I think it's Jason Furman. It is Larry Summers and one of these MSNBC, Ratner. They came out and said, we don't need a rescue plan. You don't need the Rescue Act when he first came off. And the Inflation Reduction Act, they laughed and said it doesn't reduce inflation. They said it's really a new Green Deal, and they kind of laughed at the fact that they duped the American people. Well, everyone was listening. They were watching. And I'll tell you, if I own a dealership, I'm not too happy that they're jamming these cars down my throat and leaving them on the lot. And if I work in the auto business in Michigan, which is the number one state, I'm not too happy about what's going on right now.
That's why Mike Rogers is winning that race.
Is he winning right now?
He is winning that race.
Okay, because, wow, man, why did I take a break? Why did I take a break to finish the show? I saw he was trailing by one.
By one vote?
No, a 0.1%.
Oh, okay. It might have just shifted, but he was winning as of 2 hours ago. Well, anyway, the reason it's even close is because that EV issue is a big deal in Michigan. And listen, David Axelrod, the whole racism, sexism thing.
So disappointing.
Look at the coalition. Look at the increase in black vote that goes to Trump. Look at the increase in Hispanic vote that goes to Trump. It boggles the mind that that's the explanation. And I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching in the Democratic Party about the way forward.
Right now, Slotkin has 48.55 to 48.38 with 95%, still a 95%, still a 95%. Do you do a 97%?
Yeah. So okay. That could go to automatic recount if it's within a point and a half.
Interesting.
Dave McCormick is probably going to pull it out by about 50,000 votes. There's some vote out in Cambria County. There's some mail-in vote, but I think overall he's going to pull it out.
Yeah, Selena Zito, as you know, very tapped in Pennsylvania. So there's no votes out there for Casey, that it's McCormick's race. I know we have not called it. It's 49.09 to 48.35 if we're looking at the live tally in the New York Times. More with Brett Baer in just a moment, and very little talk about my hair.
Covering this historic election like no other.
Are there any places where Kamala Harris overperformed from where Biden did?
Literally nothing.
Literally not one county?
This really was an historic, flawlessly run campaign. She had Queen Latifah never endorses anyone.
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Again, we're not stupid. The Democrats are the one who were saying Joe Biden was mentally fit for 2 years when he's a vegetable and couldn't even make it off stage from giving a speech. And the Democrats would lie to our face and say the videos were edited, altered. They weren't. Then, after the primary is over, they stage a coup, get rid of Joe, put in Kamala, and suddenly she's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Same woman who ran for president got zero votes. Same woman who can't even answer a question how she's different from Biden.
So Dave Portnoy went on for like 5 minutes, but he speaks for every man. Barstool CEO, self-made multimillionaire. But just saying, I'm not a Republican, but there was nobody else to vote for. What don't you people understand? But instead, as Brett Baer and I were talking, Martha, moments ago, great job in coverage. You and Brett were awesome as usual with your whole panel, all your panels. But he's just saying that a lot of people just saying, oh, racism, sexism, misogyny, that's what they choose. You know, I read you have one of these celebrities came out and said America chose a Nazi over civility. Instead of just saying this was a landslide and these are the people who live in your country.
Yeah, I think that thank you, Brian. Good to be with you as always. So I think that the retrospection has to begin. And this morning I was watching some of the morning shows, and on Morning Joe, they were saying basically that, you know, what a shame that Merrick Garland wasn't more aggressive and that Mitch McConnell you know, had a moment where he could have impeached the president and then he wouldn't have been able to run again. They are going back to,
I did not know that. I'm hearing this for the first time.
I just thought, you really don't get it, do you? You really don't understand that there is a very broad coalition of people who call themselves American citizens who don't pay attention to the stuff that you are honestly, you know, droning over morning after morning. I was thinking about the way that the MSG rally was interpreted. And, you know, that afternoon I tuned in a little bit late and I saw President Trump speak and I saw the Melania moment. And it wasn't until later that I caught up on this Puerto Rican garbage comedian island thing from the insult comic. I don't know. Was it 4 hours before? Right. Yeah. And I remember thinking, like, I don't think this is a big deal. I think that, you know, I think this looks like a pretty big win at Madison Square Garden to me. And, you know, then it gets beaten into the American consciousness. Oh, no, this is a very big deal. He has deeply insulted all Puerto Rican people. And, you know, because this guy said something hours before.
It's so just like,
it's preposterous.
And, you know, we saw Florida come in and those numbers in Florida. And he was going to win. Yeah, he was going to win Florida anyway. But you looked at some of the counties, Osceola County, heavy Puerto Rican, overwhelming turnout for Puerto Ricans for Trump. Latinos in, not only Cubans, but other Latinos in Florida, overwhelming for Trump, even in Miami-Dade. And so that was a harbinger. It was a canary in the coal mine about what was happening. And to your point, the comedian, it was just really burned in the American public. But you know what changed it is when President Biden said garbage about, you know, Trump supporters. And I actually think that made more of a difference because people said, again, here you go again.
Right.
Deplorables, here we go again. You're not listening to me. And this vote sounds to me like people going, hello, I'm over here. I really do have a problem with crime and immigration. The economy sucks, and I don't like woke stuff.
Martha, but they just look like they got the memo. Will they get the memo eventually, or are they just going to continue to rail against Trump and act like everything he says is the worst thing they've ever heard?
You know, I think for a while they're going to continue to rail against it. I think there is always sort of a process. I think we're witnessing Kamala Harris, the vice president, going through that right now. We're trying to figure out exactly what time she's going to come out today. I think it would have been really wise for her to just rip the Band-Aid off
last night
to come out, to concede, to say, you know, something along the lines of, it's been an honor to run and an honor to be vice president. I got
to
know the country.
Or at least make a call.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Concession
the
call.
Phone call. I know. I mean, I think about them at down here at on September 11th, shaking hands. You know, it's not impossible.
It's possible. Martha and Brett. Brett, unfortunately, you've been asked to leave.
Okay. I'll right. leave the island.
Martha, would you stay?
I'll stay.
I just like you so much better.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Nobody deserves this more than him, and nobody deserves this more than his family does. This is what happens when the machine comes after you. What you've seen over the last several years, this is what it looks like. Couldn't stop him. He keeps going forward. He doesn't quit. He's the most resilient, hardworking man I've ever met in my life. His family are incredible people. This is karma, ladies and gentlemen. He deserves this. They deserve it as a family. I want to thank some people real quick. I want to thank the Nelt Boys, Aiden Ross, Theo Vaughn, Bustle with the Boys, and last but not least, the mighty and powerful Joe Rogan.
And the crowd at Mar-a-Lago goes wild after President Trump's win. Once he got up there, started speaking, talking about pretty much sticking to his kind of script, he said, Dana White, why don't you come up here? You've been a friend of mine for a long time. That's a little of the scope and a little bit like the MSG rally. These are the people around him, his loyal friends, and they're a very diverse group. Martha McCallum, fresh off hours of great coverage on Fox News, getting set to host your show at 3 o'clock. We are, your reaction to Mar-a-Lago, you cover that too after you made the announcement.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting to hear from Dana White there. And one of the things we talked about last night is that every campaign, every era has its medium. And, you know, when Nixon did a debate on television, that was a big deal. And we've had all of these years of strong cable coverage of politics. But this was a podcast moment, and these guys deserve their credit because people are listening to a longer form podcast, all the ones that we do here as well at Fox. And I think there's something to be said for that. You know, they called it the bro, like, you know, diving deep into this bromance kind of coverage. But I think it made a difference with a lot of young men. They went to meet them where they were. And I think that was a significant part of this victory. And they're, by the way, they're Black, Hispanic, white, you know, all different backgrounds. But I thought Trump's speech last night was really an extraordinary moment. And he had Dana White's exactly right. I mean, no one is more resilient than this human being. It's absolutely extraordinary. I mean, any one of these things would have broken any of us to be under the kind of pressure that he's been on. He thrives under pressure. Remember, every time he got indicted, he kept moving up in the polls. So, I mean, all of these moments have just made him more kind of aggressive and anxious to fix the country. I think it's just an absolutely, it's the most intense political story and person on the political scene that we have seen in our lifetimes.
Just an observation about Trump. Remember how calm he was after the Access Hollywood tape came
out? Yes.
And remember how he walked around and asked people, what do you think I should do? And evidently he just walked around Trump Tower. What do you think I should do? How should I handle it? A lot of people go, I quit. And Ryan Spreber says, you got to drop it.
Right.
So he calm. And then last night, he should have had every ultimate moment, both hands in the air. What did I tell you? Come back complete. Instead, he was a nod. He was composed. Right. When J.D. Vance made his statement, this is the greatest comeback ever, he just nodded and winked at him.
Yeah.
Okay. I love it. Remember Jim Brown had that statement, when you get to the end zone, act like you've been there before. Ball down. He acted like I've been
there.
What did I tell you?
And he could have spiked the ball. It wasn't a moment for that. I'm glad he didn't. And he was just taking it all in and said, what an honor it is to be president of the United States. And how you could sense what he wanted is to get back there and get to work.
Yeah.
To do the job. And I think we've seen not a lot of that over the last 4 years.
I don't even know. We're finding out what it's like to not have a president. Because don't tell me that Joe Biden's doing the job. There's no way. Jackie Heinrich just put this out.
Mm-hmm.
Two sources confirm that the Harris campaign has been radio silent this morning. They have sent zero talking points to surrogates, donors, or influencers. One source says they got no answers even after reaching out. Brett told me they expect something at 5 or 6 o'clock. Other news, how people responding. Whoopi Goldberg refuses to say Trump's name on The View after he's reelected president. Sonny Hostin is profoundly disturbed by Trump's win.
You know, on Kamala Harris, she should have, in my opinion, ripped the Band-Aid off last night, walked out there. She had thousands of people that were waiting to hear from her. They had this beautiful stage, a setting that means something to her at Howard University. It was a moment for her to go out and say something along the lines of, you know, this has been an extraordinary experience. I've gotten to know the American people even more deeply than I have as vice president. And I didn't get us across the finish line, but we will get across the finish line eventually. Whatever she wanted to say, it is what we saw. I said this last night, mirror image of what we saw with Hillary Clinton. I mean, we saw John Podesta come out in 2016 and say, we're not going to say anything tonight. Then we had to wait a whole day till the next day. This is not the way this should be done. American transitions should not be handled this way. And if she wants to, you know, she certainly has had no shortage of comments about the transition at 2020. And if anything, you want to basically rise above it and do what you think is the best way to make that statement. But that's not happening, Brian.
But the other thing that Hillary Clinton did that she did and Al Gore did is bring out every celebrity under the sun. Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi,
Cardi B. People are Cardi over B, it. And
John,
you know what?
Legend.
That's honestly, this is why. I mean, how many times did they say, oh, Beyonce might sing tonight? Never happened. Oh, Taylor Swift's going to be at this thing.
Monday.
And you know, because these performers are smart. They're like, you know what? I'll come out and say hello to the people, or I'll send a tweet out for you. But I'm not going to do this. And this needs to end. This celebrity stuff needs to end.
Even for your own survival, if you want to be successful.
Exactly.
And Martha, contrast this in Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump had behind him steel workers who bucked their union management and said, I'm with Trump. And Megyn Kelly went out there, did a great job in the introduction, and turned around and go, look at these guys.
Yep.
And so
they have calluses.
Do you want John Legend, or you want people that actually work for a living?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is what matters. This is what connects with people. There's the one factor that is more important with Donald Trump than anything, besides his incredible resilience, is his authenticity. And this is a man who is the same guy, whether he's talking to you or me or those steelworkers or Zelensky or President Xi, he's the same man, no matter what environment he is in. And that is what connects with the American people. And, you know, I'm sure she was trying to reach some sort of authenticity. It's not her thing, the vice president. And I think that's the kind of element that makes a huge, makes it's everything in an election. You can spend all the money in the world. If you don't have, if you can't connect with voters and show them who you really are and be funny and be smart and all of those things, you can't win.
Just quick note, McCormick's holding this lead, and you saw Selena Zito say that it's not going to move. We also have the lead holding for the Republican in Nevada, and that might be called soon for Trump, we understand, because yep. I thought it might take some time. We also know that falling behind, this is, I thought Mike Rogers is probably one of the great candidates. He's closed the gap even further, but he is trailing with 95% of the precincts in. He's trailing 48.54 to 48.38. So I don't know what's left to count and if it's going to matter. Yeah. But, man, how he closed the gap. Double-digit deficit in a blue state.
I mean, all of the Senate candidates that you just mentioned were really strong candidates, and they all finished really well. Mm-hmm. They closed the gap against career politicians. These are all, for the most part, really successful entrepreneurial Americans, very smart. Serve the country, really good candidates, and we'll see how they finish out. But the Senate obviously has a majority. We know that, and we'll see where it goes from here. But hopefully we can call these races soon because these people need to get answers.
So when Brett walked in, he said, I'm watching other channels. I can't believe how they're spinning it. Everyone's calling us basically a racist country.
Yes.
That's it?
Yes.
So here's John Stewart, who I watched on video, and he looked totally exasperated, did not know how to make sense of it. He had something prepared, but listen to this. Cut 16.
Here's the thing. Here's what we know is that we don't really know anything, and that we're going to come out of this election and we're going to make all kind of pronouncements about what this country is and what this world is. And the truth is, we're not really going to know. And we're going to make it seem like this is the finality of our civilization. This and thing. We're all going to have to wake up tomorrow morning and work like hell to move the world to the place that we prefer it to be. And I just want to point out, just as a matter of perspective, that the lessons that our pundits take away from these results, that they will pronounce with certainty, will be wrong.
Okay. He felt like he was misled. Basically, and they're stuck on the diversity of the people that voted for Trump. And you can't just say Fox people. You can't say horrible white people. You have Axelrod saying it's misogyny. Basically, we're going to vote for a woman. Your thought on this?
You know what? I'm thinking about DEI right now, right? An effort, a commission, a department in a company to try to diversify an organization. What I love.
How's that work, by the way?
Yeah, not well. And what I love is organic diversity. When people are drawn to the same dreams, they are together. I see it in my church, which has people, you know, white people, Indian people, Chinese people, and it's not anyone's intention to create it that way. It's because they show up and they want to worship in the same way. I mean, diversity is as American as apple pie and the founding fathers, but it happens naturally because everyone is welcome to dig in and to try to have the American dream for themselves. So these people need to wake up. People don't want people entering the country illegally. They don't want people breaking into their apartments and taking them over. They don't want to pay 20% more for bread. Okay. It's not that difficult, John Stewart. You really don't understand what's going on.
Can you also add this? Can we just keep girls' sports with just girls?
Yes.
And it means so much more than just the UNLV volleyball team, Division I. I'm not playing if I have to play against that. So, and when people stand up for women's sports, that used to be the cause.
Absolutely.
I used to talk about Title IX.
I grew up in that age.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, to have equal time and equal money spent on women's sports. I mean, we have what, you know, look, when you look at something, you say, you know what, that really doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem fair. We have to boil back down to these ideas.
Yes.
That doesn't make
sense.
It's not fair. Exactly.
It's not conservative.
Americans
it's common
have
sense.
A tremendous amount of common sense. And it's time that these pundits and these folks who are spinning, you know, like Tasmanian devils this morning, to wake up to that.
So the California voters approved an anti-crime measure, Prop 36, in California. This is what gives me great hope. In California, they go, we went too far. So now some of these measures, the repeat offender is going to go to jail, involving fentanyl.
Which, by the way, Kamala Harris refused to say where she stood on that.
How could you refuse to say?
What is hard about saying, you know, if you steal $900 worth of stuff, you should not be able to get away with it? She should have looked at the people who asked her that question in this report and say, well, of course I voted for it. It doesn't make any sense. And even if they were smart enough to say, well, I think you actually helped put this law into place back in 2014, she could say, you know what? You know, it obviously didn't work. And when I see something that doesn't work, I'm willing to fix it.
All right. You know what I would learn? You just brought it. I'll help John Stewart. The next candidate that wants us to believe that they changed in order to get elected and that they changed legitimately, I want to see you go out and frack. Go out and meet the frackers, talk to them and say, you know, I was wrong. 2020, I was like, we got to band with the guys, stop this. I see what you're doing. I see the responsibility. And then you go out to the crime bill. You know, 2014, I was wrong here. This is what I learned. Right. I heard the stories of these people that have been killed. When I thought I had a big heart, I wasn't using my head. Then all of a sudden, I'm like, well, can people change? Yes. But instead, I'm changing. Believe it. If you don't like it, you don't like women. Excuse me. Check, please. I'm done with this conversation.
And great leaders know how to do that, right? I mean, Dwight Eisenhower had two letters on D-Day.
Right.
Because he was ready to take complete responsibility.
I thought for a second you were going to call me a great leader. And you but you went to Eisenhower, the old fallback, don't you? I know. Good way to lose. Watch Martha McCallum at 3 o'clock today. Who's on?
We're going to talk to Mike Pompeo, and we have some surprise guests coming on.
Including, you're going to look at this view thing.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Brian.
By Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Can I tell you something? It was something when I went out on that debate stage in August of 15 with Trump. I don't know what it was, but I, even before I asked the question, I felt like I could feel the tectonic plates shifting beneath me. Just that something massive was happening there that night. And I think it was. I don't know if it was a premonition, not about me, but just about Trump, his ascension, his becoming president, what he would do for the country, the change he would make in the world. And I was at the leading edge of it that night in a way. And I felt it. I mean, I could feel it. And then everything exploded. Things got crazy between the two of us in a very strange way, tumultuous. And then a peace was brokered. You know, I went to Trump Tower and saw him, negotiated with the help of Brian Kilmeade, the Henry Kissinger of our time. Not everybody knows that. And we made up and we were fine.
Right, there you go. Megyn Kelly telling the true story of what happened back in 2016. Called Trump. I said, would you want to talk to Megyn? Guys, end this feud. And I told Megyn, what do you think? She goes, you have my permission to do it. And one thing led to another. And they ended up going into Trump Tower. And for the rest of the campaign, everything was fine because it was getting violent. People were getting threatening her. And it was affecting everything she was doing. And, of course, all the tension in the country at the time in 2016. And next thing you know, she's on the debate stage introducing the president in his last day before the biggest election of his life. It's crazy times.
It is. And the Henry Kissinger of our time. Is that how we have to refer to you now?
Just Eric. Next. Donald Trump won the 2024 election. Christina Applegate, Andy Cohen, more celebs react to Kamala's loss. Cardi B says, I hate you all bad. What does that mean? Do you know? Do you talk? Burrow? I'm not sure. What do you do? What does that mean?
I think she's just not happy with anyone who voted for Trump, is how I would interpret that.
Andy Cohen said, called out Republicans, including Trump, who claimed Trump's loss in 2020 to President Biden was rigged by asking his ex-followers, so the election isn't rigged? Cute. John Cusack, yes, he's still around, says the fact that this country would choose to destroy itself by voting in a convicted felon rapist and Nazi is a deep, is a sign of deep nihilism. To put it mildly. So he's not happy, you don't think?
I don't think today is going to be his best day ever.
Next, Shohei Ohtani undergoes shoulder surgery following the 2024 Olympics, World Series. Just 10 days after the Dodgers superstar dislocated his left shoulder, he tried to play through it, which is amazing. Plus, he has another shoulder problem that stopped him from pitching this year. I mean, he's worth $1 zillion, so I'm sure he's got just a partially dislocated left shoulder and a torn labrum. That's kind of serious.
I'll take your word for that one, too. Are they the same shoulder?
Good question. Pete, can you find out? Yeah. Could you just can look at some old footage? Next, Tom Brady is not currently dating anyone. Is that the story you gave me?
Well, continue reading. Oh,
anyway, a source exclusively tells Page Six, in the wake of the recent revelation that his supermodel ex, Gisele Bündchen, is expecting a baby with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor boyfriend, Joaquin Valenti. An image circulated on social media, Brady strolling with an unidentified woman, said tongues wagging, but an insider tells us the football star is not dating her. He's super focused on his kids and work. He also seems to be making the party rounds and chatting up some female scenesters, while hanging out with Leonardo DiCaprio. Who does he not hang out with? Does he drink every day?
Leonardo DiCaprio?
Does he get off his boat and just go right to a party?
I mean, he's always with always at parties, always with models, usually, what, like 25 and under?
Do you think it bothers him that she's pregnant with another man's baby?
I mean, I don't think he feels he's good about it, but I don't, I mean...
He should get someone hotter than her.
She's like the most famous supermodel in the world.
That's true. All right. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to get a super secret password for some dating site. A man dismissed as fat and given Ozempic before doctors find 60-pound tumor in his belly. The doctors were convinced that a Norwegian man was simply fat. His name is Thomas Kraut. He's 59 years old. He's in Oslo. In 2011, he began having health problems with his stomach and growing more and more fat. He was initially diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. 12 years later, a doctor took a closer look and preparing him for gastric sleeve operation to tackle obesity. The doctor immediately ordered a CT scan when they saw that it was a malignant tumor. Kraut underwent a 10-hour operation, removed the huge tumor. Once removed, it weighed 60 pounds.
That's definitely better than going on Ozempic and getting a sleeve.
Right.
And hopefully it didn't spread.
It was just a bad story all around. Why did you put that in there?
But I'm
so
depressed.
But he lost
60 pounds.
Oh.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.